Blog Talk. Hello and welcome to Awakenings. That was Breathe. Just breathe. I know we're all breathing because we're alive, we're awake, and we are aware. Hello, all you radiant light beings, all of you that's tuning in from cosmic dimensions, all of you in the chat that I see, welcome in light, and all of you that are listening to the archives later on. I'm your host and friendly co-pilot, Michelle Mache. I really want to welcome you all. It's great to connect with all of you. Always great to connect with all of you, but especially on this auspicious day of an alignment that is taking place energetically. And we're going to be diving in a bit to that before our guest today comes on. Awakenings highlights conscious living for conscious lives. Awakenings Radio is a place for awakening conversations with artists, musicians, metaphysicians, spiritually minded people, and progressive thinkers in their own fields that are waking up, are awake, and are awakening more and revealing and reflecting their awakening through various means. Now, this can be any type of mean. It can be political, spiritual, music, art, any way of just expressing and being in the world. And Awakenings Radio hosts dialogues and interviews with spiritual teachers, healers, conscious experts that are taking this awakened state and living it and allowing it to be a bridging point between science, spirituality, and the shifting reality that we're all co-creating. And Awakenings is a timely relaying of essential information, insights, inspiration, and tools for transformation and spiritual unfoldment. And isn't that what we're all doing? We are constantly transforming. We are constantly inspiring each other. My new motto is engage, encourage, empower. And I'm open for that to happen with me as well. And I think it is just about being open. Many of you know that there are new energies that are beaming us on the planet right now and beaming as us, through us. I mean, we get multidimensional beams. It's not just happening perhaps in one, that it's happening to us. We are a part of this as well, as we are individuated consciousness of the all that is, but we are all receiving it as well as co-creating. Now, I had a couple emails this morning, which I really love, by the way. And also, if anybody wants to call in and chat or share how you're experiencing the energies of 999 right now, the number's 347-539-5122, or you can tweet me at Awakenings Tweet, and I'll be pulling that up a little bit later. Or the chat room as well. It's a great way to connect and share your insight. I had a really good email, and, you know, we can never think of everything ourselves. This is why I love connecting with everyone, you know, whether it's here on Awakenings on Blog Talk Radio or, the seminars and workshops I do, Twitter, Facebook Awakenings page. Just had Fiona, and I think I see you in the chat. Thank you so much. Just uploaded a very inspiring video on that meditative state. It's because, you know, if all of us, as we travel the road of life, and whether consciously or unconsciously, we all do have an effect on each other. And many times that effect can be that inspiration that someone needs, or that just little bit of courage. We just never know. And my feeling, my contention, what I have been seeing, many of you have heard me say this phrase before, before, is that we're moving out of consumerism into creativism. And creativism means the spirit of play. This play is the same vibrational frequency as meditation. It's a very high vibrational frequency. And anybody that's been in that play, just for play's sake, whatever you're playing, whether it's a sport or music or just playing at life or just painting or just going out for an adventurous day or having a great conversation with somebody that things are really clicking, you lose track of time. You lose track of how you look and how you sound. You just are. You're just in that moment. And I call it also the space beyond thinking about am I being or what am I being or how am I being? How am I being? How am I being perceived? Is someone liking me? Am I not using the right words? Or am I using the right words? As Katiana, we were tweeting last night, said, we are just being. And that's it. When you're so in that moment of creating or connecting, you remember yourself, your true self, but you lose track of your conditioned self, the ego personality that's been conditioned, and you connect into your true ego personality that is just a divine reflection as you are, that divine play, and the boundary shift where you don't feel that separation with that person in front of you or people in front of you or even if you're working on your art, there's no separation. That's where the dance and the dancer are one. And so my feeling, what I've been experiencing and seeing over the years, is that we are moving into more living this way continually and consistently. And living this way, meaning on a mainstream, everyday level, so that this is imbibed within us, imbued within our culture, our society. Dwayne Elgin, wonderful author, futurist, sociologist that we had on months back, I think, probably April, May, maybe June, I don't know, back at springtime, I believe, springtime actually, wrote of this in his The Living Universe book, and also his Awakening Earth, which to me, on a spiritual, psychological, sociological, biological, you know, anthropological, all the ologicals, he taps in and weaves this wonderful tapestry, which really does reflect, you know, where we've been as beings and a species and where we're going, and also bringing in our other dimensional or other aspects of ourselves, not to leave those parts of us. And that's what I'm seeing in this new energy, this new world that we're co-creating, is that we're bringing all of us. And Tammy's saying, I love how dreams are merging reality more and more. Yes, yes, you're going to find that blending of your waking state and supposed dream state, as well as, you know, waking up to that you are the dream and you are the dreamer. You're co-creating it, and there is, it's just a different reality or a different aspect of self. And many times we're receiving messages in those dreams, the messages from our soul that we're meant to take forward into our, what people call waking state. I think we have to think of another name besides waking state, because we're always awake. I've had a few experiences in my life of what it's like to be, you know, to not fall asleep, to, in other words, to be complete consciousness and to be completely aware all the time. And we do have a break from this reality or this dimension when we go to sleep. Our physical body gets to a level that it's sleeping. You know, it's tuned out or tuned into a different frequency. So we have this physical body, this temple, the dense body on this dimension is able to take a break, and because it's not able to handle for long periods of time yet completely the other dimensional reality, living simultaneously and living without taking a break, a nap, or we still have some things biologically and physiologically. But that's shifting. It's more and more, you know. Light's putting, I love it when spirits I have known visit me in my dream. Yes, I've been having a lot of that lately in sleep dreams, merging with 3D life experiences. as well, Tammy, as well. Part of that is, again, as we're shifting on this density, this layer of experience, and many people know this metaphysically when they say the veil is lifting or it's getting lighter, dissolving, there is more of a merging. And part of it is when you are about to go to sleep or you're in that wake-sleep state or in the dream state, the veil is not as thick or as heavy. So you are open more to the astral plane, the astral realm, which I call is like, you know, we have our informational highway. The astral plane is the spiritual highway. You know, it's the gateway to other dimensions. And, you know, you don't want to come, and it's also, its counterpart is our emotional body. So it is the energy in motion that gets us through the astral realm, if you will, into expanding into other dimensions or more expanded dimensions. So a lot of times in that state, it's rich with not only what you're dreaming or thinking about, even when you're sleeping, but what others are dreaming or thinking about as well. There's a correspondence. Part of the reason this is happening more and more, you know, we have these configurations that are happening numerologically and also astrologically. And the one that we're connecting in today is the energies of 999. The email that I got earlier was, what does that matter? It's just numbers. Well, if you think about it, and we'll dive into this at another program, and we touched on it a couple weeks ago, and we'll dive back in. And some of my channelings on YouTube, Light Being 21, that channel, literally and figuratively channel, go into this. But remember that we really are, we are a note. We are a verse in the universe, the one song. So we are vibrational beings. So we have a tone to us. And that tone is musical in nature, which is mathematical in nature. So we are a configuration of these wonderful blendings of a tone that come together that create our signature vibrational frequency. So what that means, and I hope the person that emailed me, the listener, is going to get this from your wonderful email that you emailed this morning, is that because we are this configuration, we are, you know, the substance of a frequency that is mathematical in nature, then when we do hit certain numbers, we do feel what those numbers are bringing forth or representing. This 999 breaks down to a 27-9, which a 27-9 has it's about completion, but it's also about preparing for the birth of the new. It's also about connecting on a relationship level. That's that 2 energy. So it also has to do with connecting to your own self, your higher self, your other, you know, your own relationship to yourself as well as others, as well as the spiritual energy of that 7. And then Michael Manuel has it as a 2, as 11-2. You can look at it either way. Either way, it's a master number. But the bottom line is that 2 in there means that it's about right relationship. It's about attuning ourselves more to our true way of being. And you can look at that as mathematical, as a frequency. You can look at it as emotionally if you want to, psychologically. You can look at it as a physical or physiological level. Am I attuned to my body physically? You know, is my body, do I need to listen to my body more? Do I need to listen to my feelings more? Are there certain foods I need to eat more of? I just started taking some different supplements, because when you do a lot of mental work, a lot of psychic work or channeling, you do, your body uses up extra B's, specifically B1 and B6. So I added extra B1 and B6 as well as niacinamide to my B complex with C and some other things that I'm taking. So it's the time to attune, to check in and receive that energy. And the 9, again, is that, has to do with that pregnancy, that there is a birth, that we're in that birth canal, birth channel. We are birthing something new, but we always need to complete something before the birth, right? We're always in the middle of a beginning, a middle, and an end, or a completion, or there's a birthing, and then there is a gestation period again and another birthing. So we are spiral in nature. We're cyclical in nature. And so Adonia in the chat put, we're attuning ourselves. Yes. Oh, goosebumps all over. Exactly. We are attuning ourselves. Someone in the chat room said you've been seeing 1111. Again, that's another vibrational frequency. That attunes you to that 11th dimension, that you're more aware of your connectedness or interconnectedness to everything and everyone, of humanity in an individual way and also a universal way. So it really helps you feel safe in the world, that you feel this connection to everything and everyone. So it is, for those that, the signs are always there for everyone. It just, they come in different forms, different fashions. So some people are attuned metaphysically to the signs, numerically or numerologically, astrologically. Some people, it's just a word that someone says. Some people, it's through prayer. Some people, it's through meditation and contemplation. Some people, it's through board games. Some people, it's through reading a book. Whatever the signs are there, they're always there. And the thing to connect in with is, on some level, we're putting the signs out collectively in that place of the all that is. And then we're perhaps receiving them on this layer or this level to help us evolve or grow, expand, connect more, to help us become even more ideal. So we're in this wonderful co-creation where, again, we are the singer, but we are the song. And I do think it's important to just always be aware that we're also, the numbers are reflecting an energy that it comes from a certain frequency, a certain vibration, a certain wavelength or a pattern that is needed and necessary right now individually and collectively. So again, it's another way of reading the signs. It's another roadmap, if you will. And that's, we put these roadmaps there to know that we're on the right road and to begin to understand what it is that what's our next step, our next way, our subconscious, if you will, that collects into the consciousness of the all that is very symbolic in nature. It's beyond words. And it's moving us in more into that feeling tone, that feeling level of being able to feel and follow that which is unfolding in front of us. Our guest today, actually, which is fits in so perfectly, when I saw who we had on Awakenings today, I thought, oh my God, this just fits in so perfectly, because our guest actually helps people in this unfolding or following this roadmap. And we have Carrie Hone on today, who, after 25 years of analyzing dreams, how dreams offer a roadmap for success and wellness, she decided to do some pioneering work in dream research, which enabled her to identify the common hero cycles of conflict, cause, and resolution that take the dreamer on an adventure of self-discovery. Carrie also conducts workshops on living life intuitively by assessing inner wisdom, and she's developed a motivational arts program for high school kids, which is wonderful, at-risk youth. And her articles appear in PubMed, and she's the author of The Mind's Mirror, Dream Dictionary, The Mythology of Sleep, The Waking Power of Dreams, Nothing Bad Happens in Life, Nature's Way of Success, and The Tao Te Ching, The Poetry of Nature. She's also featured in Early Woman Masters as a contributor to women authors of The Tao Te Ching. And for those of you that want more information, her website is wayofdreams.com. And welcome very much. It's really wonderful to have you here, Carrie.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yes. Yeah. And is it Carrie or Kari?
It's Carrie.
Carrie. Okay. Wonderful. Yes. So you're here on this auspicious day where people are actually all over the world tuning in to a symbolism.
Great.
Yes. So isn't that huge? Mm-hmm. Of... 999.
Mm-hmm. I was listening to what you were saying really about, symbolism, and that metaphorical way of looking at life, whether it's through astrology, numerology, or whatever, that's really the palette, the landscape of our dreams, and that's kind of where I, where my specialty lies in understanding its kind of symbolic language. And
We've got some people in the chat saying hi. Michael's saying hi. Everybody welcomes you.
Thank you. That's very nice.
Yeah. And you know what's interesting, and you say helping people decipher this, because it really is a language that we need to relearn in a way, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, it's always interesting to me that we spend one-third of our entire life in this state. So it would be hard to believe it didn't have some relevance for us. And when we look at the body, it's healing itself constantly without our knowledge at all levels. And to think that it stops at shoulder level is kind of ridiculous. So the whole idea of dreaming, I see as a way of, you know, we're order seeking creatures. We want order.
Is that what it is? Now I'm going to interrupt just one sec, Carrie. If you could talk louder or move your, because I have you all the way up. People are saying it's a little, little lower.
How's this? A little better?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, that's better. So you just have to have attention to that, because it's going through different broadcast software. Okay.
So, you know, we're order-seeking organisms, and we don't like change, and we spend all of our conscious lives building structures. And I see sleep and the dream process as whatever evolutionary mechanism is keeping us evolving in a changing world. So whether or not we remember them, they're healing us. It's just that when we take an active approach in working with our dreams, we're able to, in a sense, fast forward our growth.
Mm. So you say they're always healing us, even if we're not aware of them.
Absolutely. You know, because in terms of healing or helping us to release the past so that we can grow to meet the future, that type of healing, we tend to get stuck in our ways. And, you know, for the most part, the dreams that I analyze, and that was what I wrote about the cycles of cause, I'll see conflict, cause, and resolution in every dream. Even if it's a sentence, you know, dreams are so jam-packed with rich symbolism. So I would say more than not, our dreams are often about conflict resolution. So, you know, certainly we have these great dreams where it's affirming our path, or, you know, the great woman, wise woman, or wise man comes forward as a representation of us and our growth. And, you know, so certainly there's all types of dreams. But, you know, I tend to work more with people who are stuck in a transformational pattern, and the dream becomes their higher voice. You know, there's something, I think there's the idea that we interpret dreams, but when we interpret them, we discover that something's interpreting us to ourselves. You know, it's, they have a profound wisdom about who we are and where we're going.
So most of the dreams that we have are, what I'm hearing you say, are conflict resolution in nature. Perhaps something we didn't handle in the waking state is trying to be handled in the dream state.
Right. So, you know, like people ask me about, you know, because I analyze dreams for people from all over the world. And one of the questions I get asked is, you know, does a person in Belgium dream differently from a person in India? And the symbols are the same, but what I see is that the age groups tend to it's the age groups that really break down what we dream about. And, you know, in our 20s, a lot of times we're being forced into the workforce, we're adopting an identity we're not comfortable with, we spend the whole day being told or trying to be something we're not quite comfortable with, and then in our dreams state, we're generally having those chase dreams, and I see them as being chased by the unintegrated. We haven't had the chance to really go, oh, I'm comfortable being all of a sudden, you know, chief over four people, and I had to reprimand somebody, and, you know, so it's that kind of process. It's like it's as an important part of life and health as everything else we do during the day, you know.
Wow. Now, Michael's asking in the chat, Carrie, are dreams like retuning the guitar strings for the next song?
Yeah, that's a beautiful metaphorical way of looking. Exactly. It's like I see dreams, the dream process, as sort of a plow over a hardened landscape. It's tilling the soil, And yeah, it's like maybe you're moving into a higher octave, you know, whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm.
So it is preparing us. That's a great way to put it.
So is it things that perhaps like that are left undone or need to be completed before we can go to this next level? Is that what comes up in the dreams?
Yeah, I mean, you know, when we're trying to move forward and all the doors are closing around us and we're very frustrated and angry and we start to, you know, not have great relationships with people around us or whatever, you know, the dream I see as a very powerful medicine, you know, is kind of helping us. And what's interesting about dreams when I'm analyzing them, especially when I'm coaching somebody, I always use dreams because dreams, you know, a person can sit there and to try to describe their situation, and it could take 3 hours where the dream will sum it up in this beautiful, cryptic landscape. And so I see it as kind of advice from their higher source. You know, so when I'm working with somebody with their dreams, I'm able to see kind of how that growth process is happening. Kind of lost my train of thought there. Sorry.
No, it's perfect. It's perfect. Now, let's, I do want to get a little of your background, but first I want to dive in a little bit to your approach or what you feel about, like, you know, there's lucid dreaming or there's visions. Maybe a little bit of what is the difference. That way our listeners can kind of get a handle on it. And then I know some people have questions, and we will be getting to the questions in a little bit here. Do you delineate different types of dreams? Do you
for that? I see the imagination. You know, I see the dreamscape or the dream state, let's say. I see it as a place where consciousness is no longer in control. It sort of recedes, and all that's left is what we would call the imagination. It's a free-flowing story, a hero's journey, which I describe in the mythology of sleep, of somebody, you know, moving towards some goal. There's conflict, there's resolution, there's all kinds of bizarre little clues for the hero, you know, which I call the paradox, which we can talk about later. But, you know, so there's all these things that are going on. And I'm sorry, what was your question?
Well, do you break it down as far as...
In terms of lucid dreaming, right.
Well, let's say like predictive dreams or, you know, prophetic or lucid dreaming or conflict resolution. I mean, to give listeners a little bit of a background.
Well, so what I see is the imagination. It's sort of the inspired realm that guides us in our dreams. A lot of artists are able to put ego aside and access it all day long. You know, people that sit down and something just wants to have a life of its own, and they allow it to, and they listen to it, and all of a sudden a story takes place, or a sculpture is born, so I see it. You know, I see kind of like this apex of inspiration, where all of a sudden you're standing there, and some idea rises from where we don't know, but it's really profound. You know, And the same thing is kind of going on in dreams. And so the whole idea of lucid dreaming, which is a sense of controlling your dreams or being awake in your dreams, or, you know, that's not really my specialty. I know there's a lot of people that work on, you know, out-of-body experiences or lucid dreams and all these different ways of understanding the self. My specialty is more in the, you know, what the dreamer doesn't know and how these... because they put their defenses at bay, that this information is coming forward to guide them in that little dream language.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
So yes, absolutely, and that helps a lot. So you're is an integration, interpretation and integration, like Michael in the chat said about tuning. So you're, and you said getting to that next octave. So you help people tune or retune to get to that next octave or next level.
Right, and where Michael's dreams, if he was a musician, you know, may have a lot of symbolism around what speaks very clearly to him, music. You know, somebody else may have symbolism that would be describing the same message, but it's going to be unique to their journey. For example, I worked with one gal who was a trauma nurse, and she had a lot of blood in her dreams, and that was very frightening to her, but that was representative of work, you know. So everybody's different. The symbolisms, you know, kind of come out of their own, you know, reservoir of inspiration.
Okay. And then Debbie in the chat is asking, is there some reason that we so frequently forget our dreams so quickly when we wake up?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely, I mean, I've been, first of all, I was born, I mean, I always say when I was little, I just was a poet. I had this metaphorical outlook on life. I've been working with people in their dreams since I was 7, literally. And then I would say in the last 25 years, I've been much more of a coach and active around, you know, doing dream analysis. I have the website where I, you know, get tons of, I get to see what the world is dreaming about, you know, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So I basically, I'm sorry, I don't know why I keep getting off your question about Maggie.
Yeah, we'll get to your background and all that and how people can reach you. She is asking why people
frequently forget
our dreams.
Right. As I was saying before, when we're conscious and awake, it's almost like we have this rigid structure that's going on in our mind. This is kind of a common way of, goes back to Freud, but when consciousness recedes during sleep, you know, you're able to have this sort of free-for-all of idea of exploration, potential, and growth and all that. It's very... what I find is that when we're coming out of the dream state and coming into consciousness, it's like walls come down. There's a very distinct, you can call it a vibration, I guess, but there's a very distinct difference between the freedom of exploring the future, ourself, where we stand in the great tapestry of life that happens in the dreamscape, and what we are, because everyone's telling us to be this and work is requiring us to be that, you know, while we're in our daily lives. So first and foremost, it's that sense of shifting into waking consciousness that makes us like, all right, it's almost like we have a different head. And the other reason that I see people kind of don't remember their dreams or dismiss them is back to that cycle that I see in dreams. It's usually the third cycle where it's the most bizarre, and we can talk about that later, that, you know, those are the most profound symbols of what the dreamer needs to understand. But because they're so bizarre, they're dismissed. You know, it's like, okay, yeah, I just dreamt of, you know, a fish swimming through the air, you know, so that couldn't have meant anything. Now let me get on with my life. So there's kind of a lot of things at play. And like I said, it, you know, I don't profess to know the truth on all this. It's just something that I have, explored for years. But it does seem like whether the dreamer remembers or not, you know, there is this process of growth that's occurring. But when they get into crisis or they have difficulty moving through something, the dreams seem to get louder. They seem to want to be remembered. And, you know, that's generally when people come to me for dream work.
Wow. Now, let's talk a little bit, Carrie, your path of awakening to this and knowing that this was something that you wanted to do. I mean, you mentioned earlier that you've been doing this forever.
I've been a poet and artist my whole life, and this dream and all the search for symbols has always been something that I've, you know, I read voraciously, anything that has to do with comparative mythologies and ideas and symbols, and so that's always been sort of, you know, a path that I've been on. I spent a lot of time in, you know, the corporate world doing a lot of empowerment work with people. Really inspired by all of this, but in a much more formal, you know, working with people on truth and helping them to transform. I did some work with kids, I think you mentioned earlier.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, I had this sort of, I had this event where I was trying, I had been a clothing buyer, and I was attempting to go into schools and talk to kids about, you know, this field as a career choice. And it was very uncomfortable, and it just didn't feel right for me because I had left that field. And it's like I looked around and I just felt like, wow, these kids, they needed something more. They need no one, you know, I remembered what it was like. And in the same way that I'll sit down and write a book or create something or whatever, I basically sat down, and within a day, this 6-week course called Creating Alternatives came forward, and it was basically, you know, bringing the idea that of arts into education and how they can help kids. And what I was able to see is that without inspiration, all a kid has is peer pressure. And the principal would choose these kids that were maybe at risk of dropping out or joining gangs. And I was actually working in East L.A. I drove there and worked in East L.A. And, you know, it was just a very, very profound thing. And that was when that was back in the early 90s. And that was when I really recognized, wow, our inspiration is something, I don't know what you want to call it, divine, guided, you know, above us. It's, you know, that's sort of like a channel for great direction. And what I saw with these kids is they were able to really see that everyone feels like them. We would use like abstract three line poems or something, but we would, you know, even though they're writing about something abstract, they're really expressing their feelings in any way. So, and you know, after a while, I would say about 5-6 years ago is when I really, you know, dove in. I have the website. I started analyzing dreams for people from all over the world. I'd say 50% of the dreams that are submitted to my site are coming from somewhere other than the United States. And I, you know, I record the searches, and I, you know, do the interpretations. And I started to see what you're familiar with the works of Joseph Campbell.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Okay, so he talks a lot of, you know, he was able to see the hero's journey in all of our ancient stories. Well, I started to see this hero's journey in all of our dreams. And I started to see, like, you know, there was several that would, you know, we have the warrior, you know, that, you know, the dream is about chase, and they're caught up in the future and not present. And, you know, so that was kind of the birth of the mythology of sleep. It's sort of the hero's journey through the dreamscape. And so I've written those other books.
You know, what's cool is that a lot of times everyone, I believe, gets a piece of empowerment, you know, whether it's with one-on-one with someone or a piece in a group way. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like yours is, and that's our soul's purpose. So it sounds like yours is really about empowering people to get to that next level, and you're using the symbology or the metaphor of dreams to do that.
Right.
To get to that next octave that you put. I think that's so wonderful, because it is such a great tool to, like you said, get to that higher source or higher self. You know, that part of us does not speak in mundane words, right? It just does not.
They say that dreams arise from the part of the mind that existed before language. You know, it's kind of before we spoke, before man spoke. You know, we were, you know, in this more symbolic perspective. And, you know, obviously it's not the left brain, I think. It's more the right brain. So, you know, the other thing that's important in the dream work that I write about is if people can recognize everything in the dream as being a reflection of them, even other people seem to appear as sort of a representation of where we are, some side of us, you know, that's the key to really understanding its language. Because, you know, I mean, obviously at some level we could say in daily life we're all connected and everything is kind of a reflection, right? But
right.
In dreams, I think it's much more obvious. And we also have this sense that we can explore consequences at play. Does that make sense? Like something, we may be on some course that could really be devastating. And in dreams, I don't know. I hate to wax philosophically about what it's all about, you know, but it does seem that we do have that opportunity to test and try and kind of wakes us up. I never see dreams as being bad. They always have some great healing message, even when they are bad. In fact, when they're bad, it seems like they just want us to wake up the loudest. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I agree. I tend to agree with you. I think that when we do can play out things, especially if you learn to consciously dream, then you're able to play things out that you don't have to. You know, I agree with you. You don't have to go through a certain path. It's like, well, I did that in my dreams. Now I don't have to, you know. You know.
And authors and artists, I'm sure, you know, I can tell you that my dreams are a good 70% of what I write. You know, that I'll get a symbol, I'll work with it for a month or something, and it's amazing. It turns into a cornucopia.
Yeah, that. I do as well. Or I'll get something and I'll, okay, something's coming through me. You know, I'll need to write it or, you know, put it in a meditation or some form. It's something wanting to birth. Okay, speaking of birth, we're overflowing, birthing with callers and questions in the chat. So, Carrie, so one thing, Adonia went to your site and said she sees that you do retreats, but do you work with individuals?
Yeah, I do. I like to work with individuals online, and I'll tell you why. It's all I'm much more productive, and they're much more productive when it's all about language going back and forth. I would say 99% of the people I work with, I never meet. So mm-hmm. I do offer a 4-week coaching process. Right now, I'm also offering a service. If somebody submits a dream, I send them back some of the symbols to consider, you know, against their life path. So it's a little dream interpretation I'll do for free. And then the groups are always powerful because you get to see yourself and other people. Does that make sense? Like the things that, you know, there's just things that a group retreat can offer in comparing and reflecting and sharing. That one-on-one obviously is more just, okay, what are your goals and these are your, you know, and that's where dreams become so important. Sorry.
No, that's cool. I'm just looking through. So just because we've been putting the website in the chat, we'll let people know that, because a lot of people are listening by phone and computer and will be listening later in the archives, to reach you is wayofdreams.com. Is that
right.
The best?
Right. And I will say on that site as well, your listeners will find a free comprehensive dream dictionary. So if you go to that site and you want to, you know, type in shoes or whatever, you know, you'll find a comprehensive dictionary and a lot of information about dreams, you know, that my books are based on. So there's a I Ching Oracle in there. There's lots of fun.
Oh, that's great. I love the I Ching. Okay, so now I haven't forgotten people. We're getting to the phone, so we'll be between phone and chat with questions.
Okay.
And let's see, 773-568, you're on Awakenings.
Hello, how are you doing?
Great, how are you?
Okay, this is Carl, Scorpio 2000.
Hey, Carl, welcome.
Hi, how are you doing? I'd like to make a comment in what you were saying about the creative mind and people who are artistic, mm-hmm. who tap into that dream state. I believe it's very true.
Good.
Because I remember dreams. When I am, well, I guess I don't remember all of them, but when I am dreaming subconsciously from sleep, I am aware of the dreams, and it's almost as if I'm watching them like I'm watching a video or a movie. Mm-hmm. And this is the same state, or I equate it to the same state as in when I'm in my creative mind. Mm-hmm. And actually go to what I call the dream state when I'm writing a song or designing a machine or creating a project.
Lovely.
And I equate them both as the same.
They are. And in my book, The Mythology of Sleep, I dedicate an entire chapter on Percival's Grail Quest and all that about that. It's the fifth chapter of that book is all about that state and how, you know, artists are in it and that's beautiful. I'm the same way. I remember my dreams, not always, but mostly. And sometimes I'm aware of it, and I also, you know, see the same thing at work when I'm creating. So that's great.
Yeah. Now, one thing I wonder, and you mentioned creating. Do you feel that when we are in the mode of creating, whether it's song or music, whatever it is, painting, writing, whatever form of creating we're doing, are we in a similar dream state?
When you say similar,
or is it a dream state? Accessing that part of us?
Yeah, and that was what I was saying earlier. It's like the performer who goes and stands in front of an audience, the more that they can put the self aside, the more profound is the thing that comes out of them, right? That they're, you know, an actor will tell you that, a singer, the audience. It's like something goes on when a band's playing, and it's something bigger than the self. And when you're sleeping, you're whoever's in control all day is no longer in control. And an artist that is, you know, working too will say, like Mark Twain, I think, used to say, I'll only write if the book wrote itself, or, you know, people, the more profound the creative process is to the person, the more profound it is to the audience. I don't know. That's how I see it. Mm-hmm. So yes, they are very similar.
Yes, I do agree myself, because when creating it, it's almost, to me, almost the identical state of mind as if when I'm dreaming, sleeping, and seeing it and watching it and aware that I'm watching or experiencing a dream. I feel it's the same state of mind as when I purposely go into that state to do creations or to tap into that force that we all have, mm-hmm. to create. And it's to me, it's the identical state of mind.
Mm-hmm. And something leads you, right, Carl?
Doesn't it feel
like you're being led when you reach into that?
Not exactly led, but...
I mean, you're following, you know, some vision?
Well, I purposely go to that state of mind because I've been doing it so long that I've learned how to purposely go there. You can go to, just like if you want to meditate, you go into a meditation state of mind that mm-hmm. opens the door to that dream state or that dream state of mind. And it opens the door to a region of thought in the brain, which is, to me, the dream state, which is also the creative state.
Right, and like you're not, mm. you don't sit down to create music and go, okay, I'm going to put three bridges and a da da da. You know, it's more like you open and something goes, wow, you know, and you're following it. I guess that's what I mean. And that's
right,
kind of
exactly,
what's happening
exactly.
In dreams.
No, I don't go there and say I'm going to do this bridge, that bridge.
Right.
What I do is go to that state of mind, purposely going there to create music, but what's going to come out is not scripted.
Mm-hmm.
I go there and follow the patterns of feelings and spirit, and I just actually copy in the physical world what I'm feeling in the dream state or that state of mind.
Cool.
I allow it to come out into the physical world.
And that's
wonderful.
Funny. Yeah, go ahead.
No, perfect. Thanks for calling in, Carl.
Thank you,
Carl. It's nice to meet you.
Thank you.
I think we'll complete with that offline. So that's kind of what you were saying by following something in a way.
Exactly. Like there's that idea that something's interpreting us to ourselves. You know, that's what I was saying, is some side of us knows us better than we know ourselves. It knows what we're trying to be, where we're trying to go. And that's where dreams get into that sense of there's a sense of destiny, isn't there, if the dream is trying to lead you somewhere? And I'm just correlating that same thing that leads the artist, you know, that they're open enough to follow. They trust that mm-hmm. something knows more than they, you know. It's a complicated topic, but it's quite profound.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It is. It's layered. But it is, I like what you said, it is about following that. And I think so much, you know, this new awakening and becoming more aware is about that following that part of us. Maybe in a way the dream therapy or dream interpretation helps people to train. It's kind of retraining, you know, the ego personality to know what to look for, to know to look for these perhaps symbols or signs.
Yeah, the people that coach with me, you know, they never really paid attention to their dreams. In fact, on my site I have all the testimonials, and people will say, that's the first thing that they acknowledge, is there's something very beautiful when you wake into the realization that there's purposefulness within you. Does that make sense? You know, that something is guiding and wonderful, and, you know, people are really amazed at what they find.
Mm. So, again, it's that retraining.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we've got another call here. Hello, 815-713. You're live on Awakenings.
Hi, Michelle. This is Fiona.
Oh, Fiona, hi. Welcome
hi.
To the program.
Thank
you're
I'm
on
so
live
excited.
With Carrie.
Hi, Carrie. I was wondering, do you find that the more people work with their dreams, that the more prophetic their dreams become?
Absolutely. And that's another thing that's in that fifth chapter of that book is, you know, talking about the prophetic nature of dreams. I address it a lot, I think, in the introduction as well, but I see a lot of times in that third portion. In fact, at some point, I want to make sure we talk about the three cycles because it's really a great thing to know in looking at your dreams. In the final cycle, the part that's really bizarre, a lot of times it will have the symbolism that will become prophetic, like somebody will say it'll take 3.5 months for something to be corrected, something bizarre. But in reality, in that dreamer's life, in 3.5 months exactly to the day, something got solved. Or, you know, there's tons of prophetic information. Because dreams, that's another thing, is they lift us up and we're able to see, you know, a different time perspective, you know, when we look at them, when you look at them over time. And so I definitely see prophecy at work in dreams for sure.
Wow. Because I think that it's also... I completely agree with you, Carrie. And I also, don't you feel like in the dream state is part, one of the times we really feel that we're part of the oneness,
exactly.
The all that is, that suddenly time doesn't matter, and it's kind of like your dreams reach into all parts of your life and people near you and
mm-hmm.
pull up the bits, and it's really fun.
It is. And, you know, I think dreams are a great role model in teaching us that in life we're really connected too, you know. When we look at our dreams and everything's us and it's all our reflection and we're doing a lot of transference, you know, when we have situations in our lives, aren't we meeting people meant to teach us something about ourselves? So dreams
exactly.
are interesting that way.
Oh, you're amazing.
Yeah, huh? That's great.
Well, thank you so much.
Oh, it's nice to meet you.
Bye.
Bye. Hello? Hello?
Not sure what happened there. We lost connection. Carrie, are you there? I think we somehow lost a connection. What about our life chart? Someone is asking that. Okay, so let's... Carrie? Hello? Carrie? Hello, 530, Carrie?
Oh, hi, it's Carrie.
Hi.
Did I get disconnected?
We lost connection, but we're back up. And we lost Fiona, too.
I know, she said goodbye, and it was this great
hug. Oh, did she?
Hug.
Oh, okay.
And I think it disconnected the line.
Okay, oh, okay, yeah, because then it was gone.
Big hug.
Yeah, big hug. That was wild, more crazy energy, Adonia said. Yes, that is so true. We had, and also callers that are on the switchboard, not sure if you're just calling to listen, but if you do have a question, if you press *1 on your phone, then I will know that you have a question and I will click you over in the chat. Carrie, we did have another question about someone said that they've been dreaming of celebrities and hanging out with them. And somebody said, well, maybe you're going to meet celebrities. Does that have any significance?
Yeah. Basically, the other people in our dreams, to make it real simple, because I think that's the biggest challenge for us in understanding what our dreams are saying, we can stop and look at all the symbols and go, okay, well, maybe I'm in an icy landscape. Maybe things are a little bit cold for me right now or whatever. But when the other people start popping up, we forget we're dreaming. You know, so it's like when we look at the dream, we think, well, that other person must have something to do with them. And to make it simple, I always say, stop. look at that other person. Like, I just did an interpretation for somebody the other day about Tom Cruise, you know, and it's like, who is the celebrity? Before you think of anything else, what's one adjective that you would use to describe them? And then how is that adjective at work for you right now? Like, you would describe somebody as being fearless and passionate. Well, maybe you're not fearless and passionate, and the celebrity that acts that way kind of appears in your dream as a guide, as an archetype, as a reflection of you, just exploring that idea that, are you being fearless and passionate? Do you want to be fearless and passionate? So it's not so much, I don't know, I see celebrities in dreams in the same way that the mythological heroes, you know, inspired, you know, it's that same sort of thing. There are mythological heroes right now, aren't they? We'll never meet them, but they stand as a monument for us to, like, follow. It's kind of very similar.
Mm. So showing you perhaps where you can go or where you want to go?
Yeah, you know, the rule of thought is you're dreaming about what you're not recognizing, right? If we knew it, we wouldn't be dreaming about it. Dreams tend to, like, that's when it all comes out for our review. So if the celebrity's popping up, chances are we either want to be this adjective that describes them, or we're not allowing that side of us expression. So it tends to, you know, be more that we need to wake up and recognize that part of us. In fact, usually when I tell somebody to stop and think of the adjective, and then I say, is this active for you? It's like, wow, interesting. You know, I hadn't thought of that, but you're right, you know, and that kind of thing.
Mm, okay. So still there's some integration there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and we're forever growing, aren't we? So there's always, you know, it's always going on.
It's bringing that awareness, I guess, to it is part of what I'm hearing you say.
Mm-hmm. And that's why...
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say the other book that I have that's a very basic dream interpretation guide is called The Mind's Mirror, and it's from that idea that everything's a reflection of you. It's a very simple idea, but it's hard to follow. You know, you have to keep reminding yourself when you look at your dream, everything's a reflection of me.
Mm-hmm. Now, Carrie, earlier you touched just briefly, and would love to go back to that, the three cycles of a dream.
Right. Yeah, I don't, you know, that's something that I've kind of written a lot about. It's interesting because when I'm hearing a dream, whether it's sent to me or whatever, you'll hear people describe it as, well, it was this house, and then it had this room that I don't remember, you know, and that's a whole other story. But then all of a sudden the landscape changed, and we were on a train going into a jungle. And then all of a sudden the landscape changed. So it's these morphing landscapes that oftentimes become that signal for me that, hey, this is where the dream is changing cycles. And and in the first part of this, because in like the hero cycles of myth, it's always the same hero going through different landscapes or whatever. But there's always, you know, he's trying to do something, there's something comes up against him, and then the tree starts to speak, and a golden coin comes out, something bizarre, and gives it to the hero, and he's able to, you know, awaken to his real identity. He's the prince of whatever, and he needs to go home, right? Well, that's kind of what's happening in dreams. In the first part of the dream, it's describing in symbolic terms maybe some conflict that we're processing some process of integration or transformation, and a lot of times it's conflict. It shows the conflict. And then in the second portion, a lot of times it will have family members or things from the past, and not that we're dreaming that actual person is relevant, but maybe they reflect something that we let go of back then. Or I see that second portion, that second cycle, as reflecting how this conflict was created. So it gives me some clue in what I need to do with the person I'm working with. Right, but the third cycle, and that's the one that we tend to wake up with. It's that's the one that offers the richest clues, and it's the most bizarre, you know, something out of the ordinary. And I call it the paradox. It's like it shows the biggest inconsistency in our idea of ourselves. And it's
now I'm trying to remember certain dreams. And caller 228 will be right with you. I see you back on. I just want to complete on this thought. Mm-hmm. So the first cycle is what then? Let's break
it
down
conflict,
here.
The conflict.
Is the conflict. And the second cycle?
Shows how the conflict was created. like where it kind of goes back to and why the conflict even exists today, you know, in the present.
Right. Wow. And then the paradox
is
okay.
It first shows the sort of like inconsistency. Like, for example, a woman tells me that she's looking out of her eyes, but her eyes are closed. You know, that's bizarre, but doesn't that tell you something? You're really not looking.
Yeah.
Or somebody,
yeah.
You know, somebody goes to speak and all the teeth fall out. Well, maybe what you're saying isn't credible. Maybe it's not the truth. Or so it always has that sort of bizarre paradox, that inconsistency about the dreamer, but it also has the piece that needs to be considered, you know, to me, the loudest in terms of how to get through the conflict. So I see it over and over as these three cycles. It's kind of interesting.
I have to use that with my dream. That's interesting. So how to get through, and it's so in a way that paradox could be the key.
Absolutely.
To get through that conflict, then, is what you're saying.
Yeah, it's like the hero. He gets that puzzle and he has to solve it. And when he solves it,
right.
He discovers his real royal nature. You know, it's kind of the same thing. We get that little puzzle from, and the same cryptic way it snuck into consciousness. You know, it's like it gets to us. We sit with it. We try to figure it out, and it is very powerful. The most powerful part of a dream.
I love that. I could see why you write on that quite a bit. It's very profound and a great tool for people to check that out. Okay, we have a caller that's been very diligent. Hello, caller 228-588.
Hi, Michelle. This is Beth. Oh, I'm at work, and I'm kind of popping my head in and out when I can.
Okay.
I've never actually got the chance to listen live. Your show's so inspiring for me. I actually feel like I can relate to so many things, and it's great. I guess, quickly, I have a question for your guest. Seems lately, as I've been dreaming, I don't really want to say cycles. It's kind of like I'm having deja vu from dreams I've had when I was a young girl. And I just feel like my whole sense of time is kind of wrapped around my finger, you know? And I'll be driving down the road, and I just will have deja vu, like I've been here before, but it was in a dream. I mean, is that me kind of touching in with myself and my dream state that I've experienced previously, or is this...
Well, some of it that you might consider is the idea of recurring dreams. Because if you're having a dream from childhood and you're continuing to have it, there is... something relevant that you're not awakening to, let's say. So does that make sense?
That makes a lot of sense, yes.
When you talk about deja vu, then you start to talk about the area that Carl Jung wrote about with synchronicity.
Uh-huh.
His idea was that if something wants to be known, if it wants to reach consciousness, it uses a dream state, and then all of a sudden something in the day pops up and it's a similar thing. And it's all tied together, and that may be what you're sensing as deja vu.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so whatever the symbols are, there it's important. And you'll find that once you do decipher it, it will stop, you know, happening. I don't know if you want it to. It sounds like fun.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. It's very amazing to me. It's something I've experienced in my life, but lately, I guess I'm awakening more to a lot of things in my life, and it just feels like it's taken me on a great journey, kind of, and it's really
life
amazing.
Life is a great journey,
isn't
it?
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Well, I would encourage you, if you would like, to visit my site, submit your dream. I would love to help you, you know, interpret some of the symbolism.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much.
Okay, have a good day.
Great. Bye. Thanks.
Bye. Great. Thanks for calling in, Beth.
Yes.
Okay, so way of dreams. That's a great idea to have, you know, take advantage of this. This is a wonderful opportunity and a wonderful gift to connect in this way. One of the things that I like what you're saying, Carrie, is that you're giving bona fide tools for people to be able to, you know, understand and manage their dreams, kind of, you know, traverse through that inner landscape, because that's the key. You need some way to do that.
Right, and that's the Mind's Mirror is a book that's very basic for anybody who knows nothing about dreams. It will walk you through it, and it's something a quick fix. You can look up the terms or whatever. The Mythology of Sleep is more for healers, other people that are helping other people. It's the idea that, you know, the body knows how to make itself well. It's help, you know, we understand psychosomatic illness, but not psychosomatic healing. There's a lot of ideas. I was talking with, you know, one somebody was saying it's great for hypnotherapists because of the symbolism. So
yeah.
I think that's more of a book for somebody who really wants to work with dreams and help other people.
That's great. And by the way, those that are listening or even in the chat listening as well, there are links on the Awakening segment to Carrie's books, as well as I meant on her website. You can also find the books and also get more information.
Right, they're all going to Amazon.
Yeah, it's Amazon, pointing to Amazon. That's the way to go. It keeps it easy, right?
Right.
Now, we did have another question in the chat. HME was talking about relief from past traumas. Now, is there a way for dreams to help with a relief or release of past traumas?
Absolutely, because in waking life, past trauma is not something we generally want to visit, is it? You know, so when we're sleeping, you know, that healing process that I see taking place would definitely be trying to, I mean, if past trauma is keeping us from approaching the future fearlessly, it can't be good for us. It has to be processed and released. And in every way, I'm sure the dream is trying to, you know, help clear it out, you know, help us. That's why sometimes something can be bothering us for days, and then all of a sudden we wake up and it's no longer important.
Mm. Because you're saying because it's been worked out in the dream state.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. One fascinating thing about dreams is when we're dreaming, which REM proves everyone does, so that's the first argument against, oh, I don't dream. But when we're dreaming, there's like a paralytic feature going on in our body so that we're running through a jungle and jumping or whatever, but we're not actually acting it out. And that's kind of interesting because that shows that why would that be happening? Obviously, you know, dreams allow us to test our growth, to test certain things, or, you know, back to what I was saying before, we can do something without actually facing the difficult consequences. It's, you know, it's definitely a growth process. I think anyone who works with dreams would agree.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think you get more proficient as you go along. You understand how you interpret and what the interpretations are for you.
Exactly.
As well.
And you walk around with that little smile going, I wonder what this is going to mean today.
That's right.
Because I'm going to find it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a fun adventure, I tell you.
Exactly, Carrie. You know, I find all of the, you know, we talked about it at the top of the program about the astrology or numerology, actually mythology, dreamology, you know, all the ologies. Right, they really do help us live that magic that we are, that mystical existence, so that it's not just this humdrum, you know, the mundane. It does cue us into the mystical aspect of us.
Yeah, I call it the metaphorical world. It's like, you know, it's something, it allows what is to be a possibility, you know. It's what takes us out of our absolute, you know, it's just this. No, it's not. It could be this. And whoa, all of a sudden I'm flying. And it's that metaphorical space to release the known.
Now, we have another question. Is the dream state a measure of spiritual growth?
I don't know if you could say it's a measure of spiritual growth, but you can certainly say it's a vehicle of spiritual growth. I mean, in the sense that one thing I do see is when I'm working with people over, you know, a 4 or 6 week coaching process, I do see the dreams move from conflict and resolution to the great dreams, or the meeting the unknown child, or, you know, the great woman or the wise man or whatever. So I definitely see those stages. And I love it because that's the awakening of that wise one within, right? So I guess in that sense you could say, yeah, they're a reflection of spiritual growth because it seems like people then move to that, and that's when they move out of coaching. They feel, you know, grateful that they have this guiding source. This guiding source is now awakened to them, and now they're, you know. And the unknown child is a reflection of us. It's the birthing of our new identity. It's very in the middle of the process is where this type of dream comes forward. You know, it's interesting. I do see similar patterns.
I love that one. Yeah, that birthing of, again, that next level of our own new, mm-hmm. a new identity, a new way of being.
Mm-hmm. And it's sometimes it can be foreign. Like all of a sudden there's things that will be related to that young child that become very symbolic of what is going to be who we become.
Mm. And then we have another question about Carrie, being chased.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they feel like they're being chased.
Right, and that was what I was talking about earlier, that there aren't really cultural differences in the dream symbolism. If we had a language, a common language, it's that dream symbolism, but it does show up in groups, and I saw that, I see that a lot in the group of 20-something people that aren't real sure who they are. They're moving in the workforce, you know, but it can happen at any time in your life. But a chased mm-hmm. dream is what I call being chased by the unintegrated. So some side of you is at work that you haven't quite integrated, you know, and so it's chasing you, and it's that sort of reflection. And it's very similar to the shadow dream or the stalker
mm-hmm.
dream, you know.
Okay.
I can tell you an example of one that was kind of profound. Working with somebody that would be called the survivor, that's an archetype from that Mythology of Sleep book, that basically the survivor grows up and often is the caregiver, maybe is a caregiver for the caregiver, maybe they're the black sheep because they resent their mother or whatever. This survivor tends to have the dreams of somebody outside trying to break into the house. So that's the unintegrated. That is, I'm not the black sheep, and I'm going to shove it outside. But at some level, all that stuff means something to us, whether our mom cares for us or, you know, we adopt sides of our mom or whatever. And so that, you know, that's, again, a reflection of the unintegrated. And it's all about forgiveness. And when you can see that, okay, well, maybe mom wasn't perfect, and you go through the work, all of a sudden these stalker shadow dreams, being chased, whatever, you know, however it manifests, goes, you know, it goes away. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so it's embracing that part of you.
Right.
Maybe that's why sometimes there's so much fear with that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the chasing, you know. We did have another question from Kathy, Carrie, that do you feel that dreaming puts us partially on the other side of the veil, so to speak?
I don't know if we could be any more on the other side of the veil. I mean, I don't
know
what you mean by the veil, but if there's something, if consciousness is something that keeps us from not seeing possibilities, in the dreamscape, consciousness is receded. It's not at play. So whatever would be beyond a veil, I would say, you know, that'd be a good analogy for it. You know, not seeing beyond your own, you know, shackles.
Mm-hmm. So we are beyond the shackles.
That's what I'm saying.
When we're in this state.
Yeah. When we go to sleep, consciousness recedes, and something else, something very cryptic and clever and, you know, full of possibilities and, you know, plowing our hardened little landscape and planting seeds for the future. Something's going on there.
Yeah, something's going on. I love it. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, it's very profound to say the least. Yeah, there's something going on. Yeah, we're connecting into the orchestration of everything, you know.
Mm-hmm. And even our words, like Kathy's idea of beyond the veil and stuff, those are our own symbols. Everybody, you know, we all have our own way of describing what it's like, you know, and that's the symbolism kind of our dreams.
Mm. And do you find people have to know, in other words, when you work with people, whether it's online or, you know, in the groups, or especially even in groups, how would you do this? Do you find that you have to attune to their language, their way of describing this
mm-hmm.
process?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I did a group dream workshop with some folks a couple of weeks back, and it was interesting because the most subdued and, you know, quiet wallflower almost person, you know, in the group had this dream about a superhero. You remember I was saying we dream about what we're
requesting
or whatever. So, you know, as I'm listening to the dream, you know, of course what I'm hearing is the higher self speaking about what the possibilities for this person might be. So, you know, but, you know, it's all, everybody's completely different. So in that sense, yeah, you do, you have to, You have to kind of listen to what the message is. That's how I see it. And I never definitively say, okay, this is what your dream is and this is what it means. You know, I try to say, I don't know your life, but these are some ideas that you might explore against your own life, you know, because I've seen these symbols before and they can, you know, maybe this is going on, you know, that sort of thing.
Okay. So you're really working with the individual to help them find their meaning.
Exactly.
Okay.
And how much, you know, how do we measure growth? I mean, a baby step could be profound for somebody, you know? So it's all what, you know, when I look at the dream, it's a source of guidance for that person. It's whatever's right for them right now. It shows where they are, where they're trying to go, and how they can get there.
Now, we had a question from Debbie saying about being sometimes dreaming and then waking up very exhausted, seemingly from the dream. Do you have any idea on that? That's interesting, Carrie.
That's an interesting question. I mean, I know that there's levels of dreams, you know, levels of dreaming. Like if we dream of being in the dark, we're not aware, or if we dream of waking up but we really didn't wake up, that's kind of a clue that we're not really waking up during the day, you know. So when we have a dream and it exhausts us and we wake up, the only way I would interpret that is that there's definitely some conflict resolution that may be exhausting, maybe fear, maybe a lot of movement, the chase dream that you're referring to, and it could be a very difficult, you know, time for that person. And so the dream, you know, I was just talking to someone the other day that was amazed that they could be so inspired and see the vision of the future so clearly during the day on cloud nine, and then they have a dream and they wake up depressed. Like, what does that mean? You know, well, you know, it's interesting. Our past may not always be what we think they should be, you know. A lot of times, you know, that's what's going on in the dreamscape. And the more we're fighting it, could be what's tiring us out.
That we're fighting what's going on.
Exactly. We're fighting.
Internally. Mm-hmm. Now, would that mean that we're fighting what's going on in the other dimension, what we're going to call the waking state as well?
Both. I mean, if our dream, the more conflicted daily life becomes, the more active our dream life becomes. When everything's flowing for us during the day, we're not remembering our dreams. You know, dreams get louder so there's a definite correlation there. If we're having a difficult time through a transformational process, the dream almost wants to be understood. You know, it's recurring, it's loud, it can be frightening as a way of like, oh, I got it. I can't tell you how many dreams I analyze for people that they are afraid to go to sleep. That's how terrorizing the dream is for them. And after we work together, they're like, oh, my God, it's like, what a beautiful message. It really had a beautiful message. The scariness was just to get me to listen to it. Does that make sense?
Yes. Now, what about, we have another question about dreams that you can almost feel something, like someone touching you or moving you, or...
That becomes in itself the essence of the dream. When somebody's describing a dream, that's, again, the layers, the words they use, the things that become important. If sensuality and feeling and the texture become important in describing the dream, then that is something that needs to be considered in your life. Are you allowing for that? Are you feeling in life? Do you feel texture? Does that make sense? Like, if you're dreaming of it because it needs to be brought to conscious awareness, maybe you're not feeling as much as you could in daily life. So the way that they frame up the language of the dream is important in understanding what the dream means.
Mm-hmm. And then Fiona's putting in the chat, can you ask that they not scare you? That's true, because if you're feeling something and you're sleeping, you know, it could be very scary. It's like, you know, what was that?
That brings me back to the, you know, a common question, like, how can I start remembering my dreams? And I always say, just want to know what your dreams are saying. Just respect them, you know, and starting to write them down allows you to start working with your dreams, and in that process, dreams become less frightening. Because remember, the more frightening a dream, it's like turning up the volume. That's all. It's not really that something frightening is in front of you or that something bad's going to happen to you. It's just turning up the volume so that you get it. you know, luckily you got this dream state to sort of explore it. And if you're not going to get it, then that's when we start tripping over the obstacles in front of us and maybe scraping up our knees in real life. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So you're saying if perhaps you're not hearing it or seeing it,
mm-hmm.
it can get louder.
Yeah, I mean, the dream, that when Fiona says, hey, if that was her question, can dreams not be scary? Can we ask, please don't scare me, dream? If that's how I understand her question, then I would say, yeah, just, you know, the more we pay attention to, you know, if we can, A, respect our dream as a profound source of guidance of who we are and where we're supposed to be and start working with them, they actually quiet down. We'll go through periods where we won't even remember them, you know. Yeah, or that there'll be periods like I think it was Carl was talking about how he uses it so much in his, you know, creativity. And so it's, you know, the scariness to me is just how the dream is trying to say, hey, I'm trying to reach you. You're not supposed to be going on that path, you know, that kind
mm-hmm.
of thing.
Gets louder. But again, then you have to know how to interpret what's happening. We go back to that, the interpretation. Would you counsel people to focus on the feeling in the dream as well as the symbolism or the message?
Yeah, that's a great question because, you know, dreams tend to affect us the same way that movies affect us. You know, it's like we get this feeling after seeing a movie. It was powerful. We can't quite describe it, but we have this feeling. And that's kind of, you know, to me, that's the first step in remembering your dreams. What was the feeling? That's the first clue. And if you can just remember one symbol, just one symbol, because chances are your dream has come up with 27 ways to tell you the same thing. So just mm-hmm. one symbol and one feeling, and you're on your way to understanding what's going on inside.
Mm. And now what about for some people it's like seeing a movie and then other people feel like they're a part of the dream. Is that bearing?
Because I've seen many, many dreams where people describe going to watch a presentation on a stage or, you know, they're sort of like watching something. And that dream would have more to do with, because again, if everything's a reflection of you, it would have to do with what you're putting out, like the dream of reading something in a newspaper very personal about yourself, or it's like what you're putting out there for public display as opposed to the dream where you're actually a character facing the drama and everything that's going on. Does that make sense? Like the watching a performance would talk more to the idea of what you're trying to put out there for public view, you know, the drama.
Mm.
Where actually most dreams are, we're in the thick of it.
mm-hmm. So if you're more of a participant, is it more that it's you're in the middle of it?
No, I mean, you know, I would say that we're always a participant, even the observer is, you know, we're always in the dream. The mm-hmm. dream that specifically focuses on us, you know, watching a presentation, watching for, you know, people on a stage doing something. That, you know, that just would be interpreted as that symbolism of performing, you know, what
mm-hmm.
this is something we're putting out there. I see a lot of common dreams of people reading things in newspapers, maybe something very private, or, you know, it's along the same ideas that, wow, what are we putting out there? Maybe it's us. Maybe when we watch this presentation, it's something, you know, there's all kinds of clues in there about, maybe it's not us. Maybe it is us. Maybe we need to be more like that, less like that. I don't know. It's different for everyone.
Mm-hmm. And again, we go back to the theme, that individual interpretation.
Exactly.
So in that case, because you do on your site, you know, wayofdreams.com, have a dictionary. So would you say that that's not enough? That's like a starting point, is looking in a dream dictionary?
Yeah, and that brings up a good point about, I think I told you I have an iPhone application, a dream dictionary that somebody can download on their phone. And when people ask me, well, what's different about your dictionary from someone else's? A lot mm-hmm. of the old dictionaries are from Zohar and Zoroastrianism and all these old ideas, even Chinese, Taoist, that you dream of something and it's like a fortune cookie, it portends the future.
Yeah.
Where, you know, you can take it or leave it or do what you want with it. when I do the interpretation, like for example, I think you can read on some, it talks about an elephant. Well, it means you drank too much or you did, you know, this or that. Well, I would say consider the elephant as a huge feeling. We know that they're as emotional as human beings. They have emotional memory. You know, they're powerful. So think of the elephant as representing, again, the idea that you're not basing this. Some huge feelings, mammalian, something related to the mother, protectiveness. You know, consider this symbol in your current situation and, you know, how is that at play? Is there something going on where you maybe are being very maternally protective? You know, that sort of thing. So the dream's not saying, okay, you dreamed of this, and that means that you're going to meet 12 monkeys on the road next week, or, you know, it's more like consider this symbol and then reflect it back into your own life. And how is this maybe at play? Something related to the mother, something related to feelings, something related to the power of feelings that can trample us, overwhelm us. Does that make sense? Because that's an element.
Yes.
Like, if it comes charging at you, look, I don't think anything could be more frightening. And that's another thing, you know, all the animals, you know, animals tend to represent that sort of free, unguarded side of us, the wild side. And each animal means something different.
Now, you intuitively picked that up because we had both in the chat, what about animals, and then also email. And also, what about a rat? Somebody's been dreaming of a rat.
Well, as far as like the animals, I'll just say the bear is, again, has the mother side because the mother's protective of the babies and stuff, but it's also associated with teddy bears. And so the bear can, you know, have its symbolism, where a tiger is much more like pouncing and, you know, and again, all this is in that dream dictionary. They can look it up. When you talk about a rat, now that goes back, you know, first of all, when you think of the symbolism of the Chinese rat and Chinese astrology or whatever, you know, it has a flavor that's different from what we think of as the rat in daily life. And again, it's going to mean something different to everyone. So what we would think of with the rat is, okay, are you hoarding something? Are you hidden and scurrying around in the dark? Are, you know, it's that sort of stuff. Like, what would this rat represent on? As it's a side of you, certainly not bad. It's, you know, just how is this rat at play? And I think in like we were talking in the beginning, symbolism, there's a lot of it out there. And, you know, the rat in Chinese astrology is one of the most upstanding and generous. And, you know, they collect things, and you look in their trunk and they've got tons of things that are antique, and, you know, they're, and in the wild, the wood rat is collecting all the shiny things and fighting with the crow and, you know, to get these things.
So you're saying, Carrie, if I can, you do want people, it's good for them to look at the symbolism, the general symbolism of what the, whatever it's the animal or whatever the metaphor is, but then bring that symbolism
as
to themselves.
Of them, right, the mind's mirror.
Okay.
Your mind has chosen to use the rat as a way of capturing something that's going on for you right now. Are you screaming in the dark? Are you collecting things? Are you, you know, all the things that a rat might represent, you know, how is this playing out in your life right now, you know, and you may not be aware of.
Right, right. Now, because we're just winding down here, I want to give the website again, which is wayofdreams.com. And then for those that would like to download your iPhone Dream Dictionary app, how would they do this?
Well, it comes out in October, so it's not
okay.
out yet. We're putting some really cool things in it that allow you to actually type in the word and find the definition as opposed to searching through lots of terms. It also records the dreamer searches over time so that you can see, wow, you know, you start to see a picture of something beyond time, you know, something that has more to do with the future. So we're putting a little bit more functionality in it. So it'll be out in October, and it's the way you would download any iPhone app is, you know, you go to the site and you look for it. It's called the Way of Dreams Dream Dictionary. So I think it's like 99 cents. So it's basically like downloading a book that's at your fingertips on your phone for you whenever you need it.
I think brilliant. Great thing to do. I carry stuff around, you know, in my phone. Best way to do it. So you're on the go. You never know when that symbol's going to come up for you, right?
Right.
Oh, Carrie, it's been wonderful having you on Awakenings.
Oh, it's been great.
really, really insightful, informative, really it's a great gift for all of us to have you here on the program.
I really appreciate it. It's been great. I've really enjoyed it.
Good, good. And those of you that are listening, if you would like to get in touch with Carrie, you can go to her website again. That's wayofdreams.com. And are you on Twitter?
Yes, under Carrie Honey.
Okay, Carrie Honey on Twitter as well. So for their more information, as well as me on Awakenings Tweet. Thanks all of you for tuning in on this wonderfully auspicious day of 999. I wish you much peace and light. And until next time, continue to share your insight, shine your light, and keep awake. Thank you, Carrie. Awakenings airs every Wednesday and Friday at 12 p.m. Pacific Time. You can reach Michelle at info@selfinlight.com or Awakenings Speak on Twitter, as well as Awakenings Radio, Facebook.